Hey, this is Jonathan Goodman, and I have incredibly exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, is now available for purchase in Kindle, in Audible, and in hardcover. Anywhere that you find books, please go on Amazon, please go to whatever bookstore you like, buy yourself a copy, buy a copy for a friend. Hope that you absolutely love it. Now let's get into the show.
So like any good author, I devour books. I think I have like 300 books that I've rated on Goodreads. I've read 500 plus over the years. And I wanted to recommend the five best books I call for Jack Nerds, but basically for anybody who is active and perhaps ambitious that wants to pursue success in any arena that are largely undiscovered or I think not spoken about enough. You know, I'm not going to tell you to read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, like every single other one of these lists. What I'm doing with this list is I'm trying to give you five books that I think aren't spoken about enough, but are some of the most important books to read to better understand the world and your place within it. I actually have a list of 11 in total. I'll give you five of them, and then we'll link to the list of 11 Jack Nerds reading list, I call it, that you can download afterwards. So the first one that I want to recommend to you is actually, I think, the best book on content and building a brand online that I've ever read. And I don't know why more people don't talk about this. It's a book called Snow Leopard. It's by a group called Category Pirates. And what I love about this book more than anything else is it makes the differentiation between what they call obvious and not obvious content. Obvious content is most of what you see on the internet. It's the kind of thing that is easy to say, can be said by anybody, feels good to read it. It's almost like junk food for the brain. Call it like business porn, or like if you're in fitness, it's the type of thing where it just reinforces what you already believe about fitness, and so you share it. Non-obvious content perhaps challenges you. It might be counterintuitive. It might have a hint of contrast. It's something that you need to think about a lot. And so non-obvious content is the type of material where it's never going to have as much of a response superficially in terms of engagement, but it's going to create your biggest fans over time. And it's going to actually turn you into more of a thought leader and build more of a profitable brand over time. But it's deceiving because you don't see the benefits of it. And so this book is called Snow Leopard. And it's probably the best undiscovered book on content, on personal brand that I've ever seen. Next up, I'm going to give you fiction. Surprises a lot of people when I say this. About 90% of the books that I read these days is actually fiction, not nonfiction. And the reason for that is most nonfiction books, especially most popular nonfiction books, kind of by definition, have to be very entry level, very 101 level type content. There's always going to be bigger audience and there's always going to be more sales with entry-level type materials. And that's fine. You know, you think about this like a university class, right? If you went to college, you know, your 101 level like physiology class is going to have 1,500 people in it. Your level 4 level like advanced muscle physiology class is going to have 12 people in it, 13, 14 people in it. And so the more advanced that you get with information, the smaller the amount of people that there's going to be that buy that information. And so if you are a publisher trying to sell as many books, it follows then that kind of by definition, what you have to do is you have to market and sell books that are always the entry level stuff. And so once you've read 6 or 7 books on a subject like a behavioral psychology, for example, you don't really need to read the new book that's come out this year on behavioral psychology. I can tell you the 10 studies that it's going to talk about, right? I can tell you the 8 cognitive biases that it's going to talk about. And so what starts to happen, I think, with a lot of readers that read a lot is that over the years, they start to shift towards more fiction than nonfiction, because what fiction has a habit of doing is making you understand perhaps inconvenient or uncomfortable or counterintuitive truths that you know to be true, but you have to listen to in a new way in order to figure out how these things can apply to your own life. And so I love fiction. I love storytelling. Humans have evolved to learn through story. Humans didn't evolve to learn through nonfiction, step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4. We grew up telling stories around the campfire, man. We didn't grow up, I mean, even books, you know, printed books. It's the last, like, if you look at a chart, it's the last, you know, fraction of 1% of humans' evolutions were books a thing. Nonfiction books, the way that we have them, a fraction of 1% of time. You know, our brains evolved to learn through stories, to communicate through stories. And so if you actually want to learn best, sure, you learn the principles through nonfiction. And the best nonfiction actually has a lot of storytelling in it. But then what you do is you then go into fiction to help you gain deeper understandings of these truths of the world. And so the next book that I want to recommend to you is a book called The Humans by Matt Haig. Matt Haig is an author that I really, really enjoy. He's a British author. I've read most of his books. The Humans is not his most popular book. His most popular book is one called The Midnight Library. But The Humans is one of those books that I read every year, every 2 years. And the concept of the story is this mathematical professor has solved this prime number equation that will advance human society forward in ways that humans basically aren't prepared for. And there's this alien species that basically says humans are going to become a big problem to themselves and the rest of the world now that this mathematical problem has been solved. So we need to go on and basically kill this guy and replace his body and hide all of the evidence so that this mathematical problem is never solved. And what this book is this book is the diary of this alien who's come and embodied this mathematical professor as he becomes basically a human and learns the ways of humans. And so it begins as kind of funny. You know, he points out things. He's like, humans want to pretend that they're not eating cows, so they rebrand it to beef, for example. It's all of these kind of tongue-in-cheek observations on us as a species, but then it becomes really beautiful as it evolves, because what this other being starts to realize is that there's actually a lot of beauty in perhaps the inane, perhaps the disorder that exists on the planet Earth. And it becomes a really beautiful book as well. And near the end of it, there's this giant list that this being writes for his, it's, I guess, adopted son, not really son, because his family has now figured out that he's not actually a human. And he leaves him this list before he goes. And it's this like list of like 97 basically rules to live. And I mean, this is the type of thing you want to print out and save. It's just, it's really, really great. What's one? Let me see if I can find a quote from it. He says, "Magazines are very popular, despite no human ever feeling better for having read them." Or another quote that I like from it is, "New technology on Earth just means something you will laugh at in 5 years. Value the stuff you won't laugh at in 5 years, like love, or a good poem, or a song, or the sky." Or this is my favorite one. "She then made the most complex facial expression I have ever seen on a human."
Hey, real quick, I wanted to invite you to buy a copy of my new book. It's called The Obvious Choice. And instead of me telling you about how good it is, what I'm going to do is just read a couple of the endorsements of others. So the first is from Jason Pfeiffer. He's the editor-in-chief for Entrepreneur Magazine. So you can imagine this guy has seen a lot of business books. Here's what he said about The Obvious Choice. He said, "If you want to win in business without feeling like you have to win the internet, get this book. It can help any marketer, small business owner, and entrepreneur." Okay, here's another one from Harley Finkelstein. He is actually the president of Shopify. Again, if you want to find somebody who knows how to sell stuff, particularly sell stuff online, but really anywhere, like somebody who is the president of Shopify probably knows what he's talking about. So here's what he said. He said, "Consider this required reading for anyone running a small business. Goodman nails it when it comes to business insights. This book is filled with timeless advice, and unlike so many other business books, it's a joy to read. Every entrepreneur is going to get actionable takeaways from this read. If you're selling something, you need this book in your life. Trust me, you won't regret it." There's more endorsements you'll find on the Amazon page. Those aren't the only two, of course, but I'll stop there. Please go and buy a copy of the book. It's in hardcover, it's in Kindle, it's in audio, on Amazon, wherever you find books. Hope that you absolutely love it.
A kind of frustrated scorn tinged with sympathy, which slowly softened into a deep, wide humor, culminating in forgiveness and something I couldn't quite recognize, but which I thought might have been love. It's just this beautiful book with observations on who we are. And so that's The Humans by Matt Haig. I've recommended that. I've probably gifted that to just about as many people as any other book. And I really, really enjoy it. The next book that I'll recommend is a book actually by one of my favorite fiction authors, but it's a book of nonfiction that he wrote. So Haruki Murakami is a Japanese author, and he writes just beautiful kind of poetic fiction. He's for some people, he's not for some people. I found that I enjoy his work, but what a lot of people don't know about him is that he's actually an avid marathon runner as well. And so he wrote this book called What I Talk About When I Talk About Running, a memoir. And he talks about the importance of exhausting the body to energize the mind. He talks about the importance of having a physical discipline, of actually intellectual jobs, and most of us are working intellectual jobs, whether we're authors, whatever we're doing, we work intellectual jobs, we have creative pursuits, are actually physically very taxing jobs. And what happens as we age is our bodies start to break down, and as a result, we can't physically sit and keep our attention for a long enough period of time, for example, to be able to do as good of our job. And so the quality of work starts to decrease as our bodies start to diminish. And so keeping up a physical discipline and keeping ourselves physically strong is actually one of, if not the most important, predeterminants to pursuing really, really important creative work, intellectual work over time, but there's a limit to it. If you exhaust your body too much, of course, you won't be able to do creative work. And I think about this even this morning. You know, I did a CrossFit workout. It was a 30-minute AMRAP and it was punishing. And I went considerably lighter than everybody else in the group. And that was hard because I was comparing myself to everybody else, but I also knew that I'm going to be recording videos for like 4 hours today. And then I need to be there for my family. And so what I knew that, you know, the physical workout is great for my mental health. I feel a lot better. I'm more energized. I feel like I look better, which is great. It's just a wonderful way to start the day. But if I pushed myself as hard as I could have otherwise pushed myself, I would not have the energy to do the videos that I'm doing today, for example, for my brain to work this way, because it would almost be too exhausted. And so he explores a lot of these concepts. And like a lot of his books, his background is actually music. He ran a jazz club before he became an author. And so a lot of his books are actually very poetic and almost musical and lyrical is how he writes. I love the cadence of it. And so it's just a really enjoyable read. So that's number three. What I talk about when I talk about running, what do I want to give you next? The next one is actually a marketing book. Ryan Holiday wrote this one. It's a book called Perennial Seller. It is one of actually Ryan's least popular books. But what's fun about this book is anytime that I'm at a table with people who are really, really successful in the business world, and this book is brought up, every single one of them is like, yo, that's my Bible. Yo, that's my Bible. It's one of these ones that wasn't that sexy. And I think it probably came out at a time when he just didn't have like the time and space to promote it, perhaps the same way. And then he got into stoicism, and that, of course, started to be really successful with book selling. And so this one kind of got hidden. But Perennial Seller, I think, is one of the best books ever written on marketing. It talks about how to create something that lasts. It talks about how to create work that actually grows over time in attention. And what's fun about this book is that he wrote this book before he built the Daily Stoic. He wrote this book before he built this whole brand around stoicism. And if you look back at it, you know, he's just followed his own blueprint in building one of, if not the most successful, popular, profitable brands in modern times for a thought leader. It's really quite fascinating to have it. And yet nobody knows about this book. I've dog-eared this one about as much as I've dog-eared any book about marketing or business ever. So Perennial Seller, fantastic, phenomenal book. The last one, number five, I mean, I'm bouncing around this list because like I said, I've got 11 on this list. I think the last one that I'm going to give you, it's a little bit more common book. People still talk about this one, but it's Anti-Fragile by Nicholas Nassim Taleb. The only thing that we can expect with a reasonable amount of accuracy in our world today is that at one point, the unexpected is going to happen and come and kick us in the teeth. And so it follows then that we have to plan for the unexpected to happen. You cannot take a chance or take a risk where if something goes wrong, even with the lowest odds possible of that thing going wrong, that it takes you out of the game. You have to create this situation of asymmetric risk where if something goes right, you win big. If something goes wrong, you lose, but you lose small and you're still able to get up and win the next day or try again the next day. We tend to assume that whatever the biggest catastrophic event that happened previously is the biggest catastrophic event that could happen in the future. For example, the biggest earthquake that ever, you know, happened and toppled Tokyo. Well, there was a bigger earthquake than that. And of course, all of the buildings in Tokyo were built architecturally, taking into account the biggest previous earthquake that happened. And then they got annihilated when a bigger one happened, because what they did not appreciate is the fact that when that previous biggest earthquake happened, by definition, no earthquake that big had ever happened before. And so what you have to do is you have to give yourself actually a tremendous amount of space and even build your businesses around, okay, well, how many redundancies can I build? Like, if your business is built on Meta ads, for example, I mean, this happened a couple years ago, and Apple iOS decides to put in privacy restrictions where you now can't target people properly who use an Apple device, all of a sudden your entire business model is crushed. You do not have an anti-fragile business. You have not built the resiliency in your business that you have to have. Even if nothing happens, I think that it's just a miserable way to live where you go to bed at night constantly worrying that something that's out of your control is going to take you out of the game. And so, you know, this book is, I would say it's probably the most important book in terms of creating my understanding and my personal philosophy of how I'm going to design businesses and also design how I go about my life, how I build my philosophies towards family, towards travel, is anti-fragile, is looking for ways to build asymmetry over the course of my day. Anyway, I'll stop there on this book recommendation list. Like I said, there's 11 total. I gave you 5. Go check out the list. I call it the Jack Nerd reading list. Whether you're a Jack Nerd or you want to be a Jack Nerd, these are books that are perhaps books that you don't otherwise hear about all of the time that I think are books that you should definitely read.